This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the weeks since the Electoral College presidential win for Donald Trump, there's been a growing number of reports of hate crimes across the nation. There's been racist graffiti, threatening flyers, vocal outbursts, and physical attacks. Some say a dark force has been awakened in America, and some feel now they have license to lash out at the other. We're spending the hour talking about hate crime in America. And when there is a hate crime in San Antonio, it's the local bureau of the FBI that's charged with investigating it. I spoke with FBI Special Agent for Civil Rights, Sandra Torres. She said they're not seeing a spike of hate crimes in San Antonio, but they want people who think they might be a victim of a hate crime to not hesitate to contact the FBI.
Agent Torres, how do we identify what is a hate crime?
Really, it depends, and I know that's not a definite answer, but we have at the federal level about 5 statutes that help us determine whether or not it's going to qualify as a hate crime. And so I always encourage people, if you think there could be some sort of a civil rights violation, hate crime incident, to call us and let us help you help figure it out. Because the most recent statute was the Matthew Shepard David Byrd Act, which was enacted in 2009, and it's more encompassing. It now covers sexual orientation, gender identity in terms of protected classes. However, it doesn't cover threats. So if something was more of a threat, such as defacing of a place of worship, then we would go back to an older statute, such as the Church Arson Prevention Act. If there's like a burning cross, we would go back to the Fair Housing Act, et cetera. There's different statutes that might help us determine, define whether or not, yes, this is a federal hate crime. So that's kind of a broad answer, but that's because of the patchwork that has occurred over the history of our country in terms of trying to protect these groups.
So there's different protected classes.
Yes, sir.
And what are those classes?
We're looking at race, religion, the ethnicity or national origin of individuals, disability, gender, and then, like I mentioned more recently, sexual orientation and gender identity.
See, people aren't really aware that disability is also a protected class.
It is. It mostly stemmed from the Fair Housing Act because people may have been biased against renting towards people that needed accommodations and such. But yeah, there's disabilities that if we determine someone's motivation was biased based on that person's physical or other disability, then that would be a protected class as well.
So people seem confused about what exactly is a hate crime.
Right.
I saw someone here in Texas, they registered themselves as a victim of a hate crime because a Trump supporter spewed a lot of exhaust at them as they were standing on the side of the street with their protesting the election of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And so they said they were victims. Is that a hate crime?
I'd really have to look at it, the totality of the circumstances. But on the surface, I would say that may probably be categorized more as a freedom of speech, which is protected as our First Amendment right. And that's one of the examples we look at often, is where's that line between freedom of speech and a true threat, such as, you know, a communicated, whether it's verbally or in writing, but a serious threat that I'm going to do X, Y, or Z to you because you're fill in the blank. You know, and that's where we as law enforcement have to take a broader look at all the the whole circumstance. Who's the potential victim? Who are the perpetrators? What kind of environment was this done in? Can this be considered reasonably as a true threat against this person or their person's family or property? But a lot of times it's actually just someone exercising their right to say what they want, even if it's mean and hateful, but it's simply just political hyperbole or some sort of exaggeration.
So on November the 9th, a bunch of flyers went up at Texas State University in San Marcos by a group that called itself the Texas State Vigilantes. These flyers were put up in bathrooms all across the campus saying that they were going to be organizing vigilante squads to tar and feather university leaders who supported diversity.
Well, with the crime, we would need more of a identified victim. In this sense, it seems like there's no victim as of yet, other than people may feel targeted. I'm not too familiar with this example you just gave, but we would take a look at that. If somebody called us and said, I feel threatened or I feel targeted because I'm a minority or, you know, someone that this group seems to be focused on, then we could look at it and see if there's something that we can do in terms of a law enforcement. But I also, we have to be careful too, because if this is someone exercising freedom of speech, then we don't want to step on those.
Well, we know freedom of speech only goes so far. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
So you can't verbalize overt threats of to tar and feather people is a threat of violence of people. So I know, is hate crime the highest level? Is there such a thing as hate incident or some other lower level thing that y'all look into?
We do use terms such as hate speech, hate incident, but legally, as far as statutes go, it would have to meet that high burden of proof, that high threshold of what our legal elements under these statutes are, and that would be the actual hate crime. And so, like I was saying, depending on who the victim is, who the targeted person, protected class is, we would go back to our federal statutes, which I mentioned there's about five, and depending on how that reads, that's pretty much our narrow lane we have to stay in, and try to determine by simply collecting all the facts, interviewing people, whatever evidence collection we can do, to determine, does this fit our statute, our legal elements of whether it's a willful deprivation of a right, whether it was a true threat.
What was it, an active assault?
Right.
And a person says, I'm doing this because I don't like your protected class.
Right.
That becomes a hate crime?
That would be a pretty straightforward one. I mean, I believe we would open that case based on that.
And so what do you do? Because it's typically a case of assault would be something that would be handled by the San Antonio Police Department if it happened within the city limits, right?
Correct.
And then it says, oh, the guy claimed, well, they had a thing here in San Antonio. We had an African-American male. He was grabbed by his dreadlocks and put in a headlock and punched in the face several times after the election. The guy said, I'm a Trump supporter, and this is why I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. And so did that, I don't know, if you, I know you can't talk about specific cases,
right,
but something like that would end up on your desk, right?
That would likely end up on my desk and deserve a serious look. Passed in 2009.
So what happens when it ends up on your desk?
So we look at it and we really have to see if the motivation was there, because there's crime such as an assault, and a lot of times federal interest is vindicated at the state level through charges, grand jury, etc. If it's handled as an assault and a logical sentencing is carried out, because we would actually have to prove that the assailant's motivation was based on that person's race, ethnicity, etc., one of those protected classes. And if there's not enough proof, because let's say this person was just kind of like what we call the jerk defense, is, well, I kind of beat up five people that day. One of them was white, one of them was African American.
He's an equal opportunity assaulter.
Exactly. As frustrating as that can be, that is a fairly strong defense when it comes to us trying to prove a motivation, intent, and what that person was thinking. Because if they happen to have a lot of friends and who are diverse and claim, no, he's not biased, he just was mad that day.
Right.
So unfortunately, that's sometimes what we're up against. And that's because we're not trying to make a case if it's not there. We're just looking for the proof and the evidence. And that's why it takes a while for us to carry out these cases sometimes, because you do need to do a really holistic, broad look at everything.
Sandra Torres is a special agent for civil rights for the FBI here in San Antonio. Coming up next, we hear from the Southern Poverty Law Center about their findings of eruptions of hate across America and the rise of neo-Nazis in American politics. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This hour, it's all about hate that some say is on the rise in America. The Southern Poverty Law Center released a report that says, yes, this is happening. They have documented nearly 900 separate incidences of bias and violence against immigrants, African Americans, women, LGBTQ people, Muslims, and Jews in the 10 days after Trump won the majority of electoral votes and then the White House. We're joined by Mark Potok, the senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And Mark, welcome back to The Source.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So, Mark, what's going on out there? What are you seeing?
Well, we've seen what I think is undeniably a real rash of hate crimes in the immediate aftermath of Donald Trump's election. As you mentioned, we've now documented, I think, 867 what we're really calling hate incidents, because as you mentioned in the prior segment, you know, not all incidents rise to the level of actual crimes. In any case, I think that this is clearly celebratory violence being carried out by people, by and large, not entirely, who supported Donald Trump and who feel that somehow Trump's victory gave them license to attack, verbally or otherwise, minorities of all kinds.
Our phone lines are open if you want to call in with your questions or comments, observations. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Mark, I'm going to play you a clip. This is Donald Trump being interviewed on 60 Minutes, November 13th, being told that supporters are his supporters are doing this type of stuff. Here's the clip.
I want to ask you all about something that's going on right now around the country. A lot of people are afraid. They're really afraid. African Americans think there's a target on their back. Muslims are terrified.
I think it's horrible if that's happening. I think it's built up by the press because, frankly, they'll take every single little incident that they can find in this country, which could have been there if I weren't even around doing this, and they'll make it into an event because that's the way the press is.
Do any of you want to say anything about this fear that's out there?
I think the fears, you know, while they may be there, some fabricated, some not, are totally unfounded.
I think it's
do
the
you
media.
Want to say anything to those people?
I would say don't do it. That's terrible because I'm going to bring this country together.
They're harassing Latinos, Muslims.
I am so saddened to hear that, and I say stop it if it helps. I will say this, and I'll say it right to the camera, stop it.
There it is, Mark Potok, Southern Poverty Law Center. He said stop it. Trump says don't do it.
Yeah, well, that and 50 cents will buy you a cup of coffee. I mean, you know, we've listened to the man for 18 months, defaming Latinos, defaming Muslims, defaming black people, defaming women, and a whole assortment of others. You know, I think it's worth noticing that his final sort of being beaten into a corner and saying something about it being horrible and so on was all predicated on the idea that this is something that is being built up by an evil press, a conspiratorial press. You know, I'm here to say, for whatever it's worth, that, you know, we're not part of the press and we're not part of the Democratic Party. We're not part of the Trump campaign, and it's undeniable that we have seen this wave of hate wash over the country and that it's directly related to Trump and his campaign. So, you know, I just feel like it's a day late and a dollar short. It's all very nice for him to make these comments, stop it, just stop it. But that's not what he was saying during the campaign when he was literally encouraging his followers at rallies to manhandle protesters. Let's not forget that Donald Trump on several occasions offered to pay the legal defense costs of people at his rallies who beat up protesters. That is really quite something.
That interview was taped on November the 11th and broadcast on the 13th, but it was on November 12th that Trump announced that he was going to name Steve Bannon to become his chief strategic advisor. And we all know that Steve Bannon is someone who traffics in anti-Semitic material online.
Anti-Semitic, anti-black, anti-immigrant, anti-Latino, anti-Muslim. No, I mean, you know, what Donald Trump has done is invite a genuine white nationalist, a professional racist, into the White House. It is really something the likes of which I can't remember.
So what happens now?
Well, I mean, I guess we're all waiting to see. You know, Donald Trump seems to be a bit unmoored in terms of you don't quite know where he's going next. You know, is this Muslim ban something he's going to pursue? I guess he's not going to send Hillary Clinton to jail after all. You know, so it's hard to say where all of this will go. But looking at the choices, or at least some of the choices that he is making for his advisors, for his cabinet-level officers, for others close to him, you know, we are looking in many cases at genuine bigots. In addition to people like Steve Bannon, who's certainly the most dramatic case of what we're talking about, you know, Trump has essentially gotten in bed with groups like the Family Research Council, which by our lights certainly are anti-gay hate groups, groups that traffic in defamatory claims about LGBT people, like the entirely false claim that gay men are child sexual predators at rates much higher than straight men, a complete falsehood. So, you know, I think that's there's a lot going on. Obviously, we're terribly worried about where this is all heading. But I would say that things are still a bit murky.
Yesterday, there was an attack at Ohio State University from a Somali immigrant student, injured 11 people. He was shot dead by a police officer. Today, the Islamic State group ISIS claimed responsibility for inspiring this attack. Some people say it's, you know, other side of the same coin.
Well, I don't know that it's the other side of the same coin. I do know that in the wake of that attack, you know, that the Muslim community in the United States of America is terrified. It's the worst possible news they could have gotten. You know, I think that the vast, vast majority of Muslims in this country have been very upfront about being opposed to terrorism, opposed to violence, opposed to the goals of groups like the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and so on, and in fact, very normal everyday Americans. But these are people who clearly now are being targeted. So, you know, yes, you know, terrorist attacks by Islamists are genuine atrocities and it's genuine terrorism. I'm not sure we fully know what happened with this Somali immigrant, but in any case, you know, it's undeniable. I mean, 49 people were murdered in Orlando. 3,000 people were murdered on 9/11 in the United States. So, you know, I'm not trying in anything I say to diminish the absolutely real and absolutely terrifying threat of Islamists, particularly foreign Islamists, who seem to be the most dangerous, ISIS and so on. But, you know, we have to recognize, you know, that beating up Muslims or bullying Muslim children in our schools or tearing the hijabs off women's heads or screaming at them in grocery stores or whatever it may be is not only not helpful, but, you know, what you are doing is tearing apart the society when you engage in those kinds of things. You are targeting people who have absolutely there's absolutely no justification to target, and you are making our country a worse place, not a better one.
Okay, I'm going to go to the phone lines with Ann or Annie. Ann, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question.
Yes.
It seems like it's much more one-sided, and you're blaming all this on the right wing and Donald Trump and all. What about the violence and the hate crimes perpetrated and caused by the groups such as Black Lives Matter? Are they included in your numbers on these violence numbers, or are they not?
And so, Ann, can you tell me what hate crimes you're talking about specifically?
Well, I mean, they beat up a lot of people. They've gone after people. They went after my son in school at college and chased him and yelled at him and said all these obscenities, and he had nothing to do with any group. So, I mean, it's all over the media that they do these things. They are not a nonviolent group. So are they included in these numbers, or is it only the other side?
Great, Ann. Thank you for calling. I appreciate you speaking up. So Mark Potok, Southern Poverty Law Center.
Well, I simply, it's false. I think the claim is false. Now, you know, what Ann or Annie has been listening to is certainly being said out there. The right-wing media is full of these claims. You know, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group. Black Lives Matter is a hate group. Black Lives Matter advocates the murder of white police officers.
Okay, so let me wait. So we're still got Anne on the line here. I want to let's double check this then. Anne, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, he said it didn't happen. So you're saying this happened to your son at college?
Yes.
Okay, what college?
You can't say all violence is caused by one group.
Right.
One side of the
no, no, and I'm not arguing that all violence comes from white people and all violence is directed against black people. What I am arguing is that the allegation that Black Lives Matter as an institution is somehow pushing violence is not true.
It
now,
does.
Let me say,
okay.
Let me finish
okay.
my sentence.
All right, so real quick, and then Anne gets the last word.
Sure. I mean, what I want to say is that it is true that certain people involved in Black Lives Matter demonstrations have done some pretty nasty things, and I'm thinking in particular of the, a march chanting something about, you know, fry the pigs, fry the bacon,
right.
or words to that effect. But, you know, the claim that that somehow came from the leadership of Black Lives Matter, or the actual organizers, I think is entirely false, has been shown to be so. So, you know, sure.
Okay. All right, so let me get her reaction to that, Mark, real quick. Mm-hmm. And so, Anne, you react to that.
I don't believe it's been shown that it doesn't go all the way up to the top. That's a difference of opinion, and that's fine. I have Black or African-American friends that are just abhorrent of what's going on with Black Lives Matter. So I'm not anti-Black. I have many, many Black friends. It's just that the group itself seems to promote violence, and that's how I feel, and that's how a lot of people I know feel.
Right. But, Anne, do you think we could break this up into two different problems? I mean, there is a Black Lives Matter issue, and we can talk about that.
Right.
And then there is another issue of this new rise of hate that's targeting other folks.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I mean, but all of it's bad. All of it is divisive.
Sure, all of it's bad. No one wants any
to
of this.
To separate Black people and only say Blacks only matter is absurd.
Okay.
To do this, to say that don't beat up people or
right.
threaten people, that's wrong, too. It's all wrong.
Right.
So
okay.
None of it leads to any good.
Appreciate you calling in. I really do. Thank you so much. And, of course, that's not what Black Lives Matter is about. They don't say that just Black Lives Matter. They're highlighting the fact that African Americans seem to be targeted and that there's and very cavalier in the way that they're targeted by police officers. Mark Potok, thank you so much for the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Source continues as we talk about hate in America after the NPR news break.
Can you hear me? Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up. We got some Hillary on here. Come on, baby. Trump. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, baby, Donald Trump, it's your president, every one of you. If you don't like it, too bad.
And I said, no.
And I said, okay, just ring it up.
And I started to.
And then you said, ma'am, we're all human. You're not going to give me some sort of liberal lecture about who's a human. Your job is to ring people up and tell them to have a nice day. You are not going to give me a psychology lesson. You are not going to tell me who I can vote for and who I can't vote for. Yeah, you did. You voted for Trump.
Yes, you announced that to the store.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. You just heard two clips that are making the rounds on social media. One was a recent pro-Trump man screaming on an airplane. He was since banned for life from Delta Airlines, apparently. And then there was a woman yelling in a Michael's store about her support for Donald Trump, and she felt that she was being discriminated against because she is white. We're spending the hour talking about hate in America. We just heard from the Southern Poverty Law Center. They say they are documenting a surge in hate incidents since the election of Mr. Trump. But then we also heard from the local bureau of the FBI, and they told us they're not seeing a rise in hate crimes here, and there's a distinction between hate incidents and hate crimes. Nevertheless, there seems to be a lot going on social media. It gives these outburst legs. Racist and neo-Nazis can rant online and find a form of legitimacy, sympathetic ears, and people who are refusing to say that is not acceptable. And so they take that to mean that it is acceptable. So where do we draw the line? How does a community step up and say this is not acceptable? And how do we
you know, let people know where we stand on hate, particularly if we don't even want to be drawn into these ugly confrontations. We're going to talk about this half hour, and we invite you into our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. We're joined this half hour by Sarwat Hussain. She's a board member for the American Islamic Relations here in San Antonio. John Wright is a reporter for the Texas Observer's Hate Watch. And also we're joined by Denise Hernandez. She is the founder of Maestranas, a group of community leaders serving, trying to do outreach and activism, letting people know how to deal with the biases and build a better community. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all.
Thank you.
So let me ask you, Sarwat Hussain, about your point of view from the American Islamic Relations. What are you seeing?
Well, San Antonio, there definitely is a surge. We have the highest number that is taking place right now is the bullying at the schools, where even the teachers are involved. At the bus, the children are beaten up, and the drivers do not stop the bus or do anything to control those kids. 11 families have taken their kids, pulled their kids off the schools and doing the homeschooling. The problem with us is that these families don't want to go public. They do not want us to go back and talk to the schools because of the ripple effect that they will have. They think if the kids go back to the same schools again, they'll be facing more bullying there. Or if the neighborhood finds out in the news, then they don't know what the reaction, or at work. So it is all kept inside, which is hurting the community a lot. And women have been physically beaten up at Home Depot.
Here in San Antonio.
In San Antonio. And at Costco in the parking lot.
Because of the
hijab, because of what I'm wearing right now. Okay. I mean, this gives out. I proudly wear it to tell people, yes, I'm a Muslim. But for some, it is, you know, a religious commitment. And they would not take it off. Well, I won't either. Nevertheless, that is one thing that tells them she's a Muslim. And when they think a woman is a Muslim, in their heads, she's uneducated. She cannot defend herself. She does not have any rights. You know, all that is out there, misinformation about Muslim women. And they take advantage of that. But at the same time, there has been other cases as well, like job discrimination. Just this week, I received two cases where a person, he was working there for 6 months. One morning, he walks in after the elections, and he was told that being a Muslim, he cannot work there anymore.
What kind of job was that?
I cannot say anything. It was IT. Okay. And in Houston, if you heard this or not, just recently, a week ago or so, a Muslim was driving on KT Highway, and the pickup truck drives next to him, asks him to open the window. He thought they're asking for the directions. He opens the window. They throw a firebomb in it. And the car blew up, and he got badly burned. So, I mean, serious cases like this are happening nationwide as well. You know, according to the FBI report, 67% surge in Muslim hate crimes.
I'm going to go to John Wright, Texas Observer. What is Hate Watch? What are you doing there? What do you see?
Well, our goal is, you know, I suspect similar to the Southern Poverty Law Center's in the sense that we're just trying to document these incidents and publicize them and serve as sort of a clearinghouse for information about them, just because, you know, our philosophy is that the more that we draw attention to these incidents, the more it helps to combat them going into the future, in the sense of raising awareness and calling out the underlying biases. And so, that's kind of our goal, and we've gotten quite a few reports, and our report is by no means comprehensive. There have been several cases, as was mentioned, where people were reluctant to go on the record about incidents because they feared backlash, in some cases, like from their employers dealing with public schools and universities. And then in some cases, I think people actually also fear backlash from the people who committed the hateful incident, further, you know, retaliating against them. And so, yeah, we've run into some of the same issues with people not wanting to come forward, but we've done our best to try to document as many incidents as humanly possible, and we will continue to do that because I'm not getting the sense, although, you know, there has been a drop-off, I think, in the last couple of weeks after those first couple of weeks after the election, but, you know, we've got the inauguration coming up. There's still a lot of things happening that I think are going to continue, you know, and Lord knows what's actually going to happen once Donald Trump takes office. You know, which of these policies is he actually going to follow through with, and what are going to be the results of that? So we suspect that this is going to continue for quite some time, and we intend to continue to do our best to document as much of it as possible.
So, John Wright, is this new at the Texas Observer, Hate Watch?
Yes, this is a brand new project that we launched specifically after the election when all of these incidents started occurring. We were contacted by folks who were looking for a place to put all this stuff.
John, I got to cut you off. Yeah. We're going to be right back. We're going to do a commercial break. I got a ton of calls. Apologize to callers. Haven't gotten to you yet. There's so much going on here. Take this one-minute break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking about hate in America, hate in Texas, hate in San Antonio, what to do about it. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Is there more hate in America than there was before the election of Donald Trump? There are reports of people yanking hijabs off Muslim women in public, a racist graffiti on African-American churches and synagogues, things like KKK and swastikas being painted there, and vocal outbursts on planes and retail stores, and then there are the physical attacks. Do you think that you are a victim of a hate crime or even a hate incident? How do you deal with that? We're talking about that this hour. We've been joined by Sawat Hussein. She is a board president of the American Islamic Relations here in San Antonio. John Wright at the Texas Observer. They're doing Hate Watch, which they're trying to track and document all of these incidences. They're a place to call if you've got something going on like this. Let's bring in Denise Hernandez, and she is the founder of a group that's trying to help educate people with activism and outreach and how to deal with this type of activity. Denise, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you.
So tell me about your group.
So my group is called Maestranza, and I started it a couple years ago just because I kind of saw a place, especially for young people my age and in my community, where we weren't being educated on things that we need to be beyond our culture, beyond San Antonio, beyond our experiences, injustice that's happening in the world. And I feel with education, it's only empowering. The more we learn about other people, the more we have these discussions, the more we're better equipped to fight against ignorance, which is, you know, hate is just ignorance and fear put together.
So you think people need to be instructed on how to deal with this type of hate? If you're a bystander or if you're the target?
I think so. I think there's a lot of people who are confused. Maybe if you see a woman being attacked, you know, and she's wearing her hijab when she's just trying to grocery shop and go home to her family. You know, we just had an incident a few days ago. It wasn't related to a hate crime, but, you know, this man was killed because he was trying to interact and help a woman who was being abused. I think it was at the Walmart over here. And so, you know, people are naturally afraid to step in and think, oh, it's not my business. It's not my business. But in this political climate, especially, I feel we need to, every single person as a citizen, if you see something, you know, what is the thing? If you see something, say something. Well, if you see something, do something and help somebody. It doesn't necessarily need to be confrontational. There's some steps you can take to deflect. If you see someone being attacked, go speak to the person being attacked and try and, you know, box out the person harassing them.
But what about taking out the phone and getting it on video?
That helps too. Like we were saying, you know, a lot of people aren't reporting these hate crimes. So even if you wanted to use that as proof, if anything, I mean, you know, with social media storms, that helps somewhat. Like,
so
we
it
saw
becomes
with
a he said, she said, then you got it on tape.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's good. I mean, always be recording everything I say, but just to be safe.
Okay. We got so many callers. Oscar. Hey, Oscar. Thanks for hanging in there. I know you've been on the line since we started the show, but now you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that as an educator of young children, elementary school age, I'm in a unique have a unique opportunity to affect change. I told them You know, we talked a lot during the election process about how racism and among, you know, ethnicities and racism, that type of thing is taught and learned, and can, you know, they have an opportunity to stop that dead in its tracks. We gave them an opportunity. We wouldn't do a, we weren't allowed to do an election, like a class election, because of the contentious nature of everything that's going on. But we did have a debate. We had a grade level debate where the kids got to practice a healthy, healthy debate strategies, basically learning how to disagree, learning how to understand different perspectives on an issue without having that anger involved.
You have fourth grade class, Oscar. You have a fourth grade class. Any of your students expressing concerns about deportations of maybe family members, loved ones?
I have, you know, not in my class or anything like that, but I have heard, you know, about people, you know, students being worried about that. There's a tension among people, and I have definitely encountered some of that as a as an educator, and it concerns me, and that's why one thing. Your callers have been a theme of them has been fear, and the opposite of that would be education and conversation, you know, listening to one another and having that dialogue and teaching the kids how to have that healthy disagreement and understanding and celebrating those differences.
Yeah. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Thanks for hanging in there. And Gary, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay, I have a question, and Denise might be able to answer it. We have maintained, and our society has maintained, a class of people who have fear and loathing of people different from them, you know, racists and anti-Semitics and misogynists, all kinds of it, that we maintain a class of people who actually hate people who are different from them. Who benefits economically from this class, from keeping this, you know, stream of fear and loathing going?
Okay, Gary, thank you for the call. And Denise, you want to react?
That's an interesting question. So when I look at things personally and I do this work, I see who is benefiting and who is suffering. And that's usually where we can see where the issues are so we can tackle them. In this instance, you know, they say divide and conquer. And I feel right now we're at our most divisive because we're scared of what's going to happen, what's next. I feel people like our president-elect and those in his cabinet, people who are white supremacists, the alt-right, people who benefit off of our fear and our lack of confidence in ourselves and in our communities. Economically, yeah, that'll transcend, I think, somewhere along people who are hateful. They tend to stick together for some reason.
John Wright, a Texas Observer, do you think that there is a political upside for being part of this hate?
A political upside?
Yeah. You look at some of our Texas politicians.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's jumped out at me is that we haven't really seen a significant denouncement of many of these incidents from our state leaders, who are obviously all Republicans. But yeah, I think that's something that's really important to stress, is that we need not just citizens to speak out against these incidents and, you know, in some cases intervene and try to stop them. We need our elected officials to speak out, and, you know, we need university administrators to speak out, and we need anybody at an institution where one of these incidents occurs to forcefully speak out. But we have not seen that from our state leaders to any significant extent that I can tell.
Sarwat Hussein, what would you like to see our state leaders be saying?
They have to come out and really forcefully denounce it. So far, Donald Trump himself has not done that.
Well, he said, stop it.
What little he said was, is that enough? I mean, he should be calling a press conference. He has to meet the press at some point or send out the tweets if that is the way he wants to communicate with the press. He has not done any of that. And that, too, what little he has denounced, he was asked many, many times on that show.
But what about locally? I mean, we have a mayor, we have county commissioners, we got a county judge. What are they saying?
Okay, we want the mayor and the law enforcement, whether it is FBI or police, please reach out to us. Because my hands are tight, okay? These cases are coming to me. I'm told by these people, by the clients, we do not want these cases to become public. They are very, very scared of the law enforcement itself. Law enforcement has to do something to gain that trust from them. I can arrange the community gathering for them. They come out, talk to them. But when we call the law enforcement, it is not there. You know, that's and it, this needs to be, it will take a village, really,
right,
to condemn all these things.
Just so you'd like to have a meeting with the new sheriff,
With
Javier?
The new sheriff, with the mayor, with the FBI, with everybody else. They should be calling and also asking. They've been hearing this. I've been talking. It has been in the news. It has been on the other news, in the Express News as well. When I'm talking about these crimes, I'm here today. Not that they do not know of it.
You ever talk to Sandra Torres, the special agent in charge of civil rights at the FBI here in town?
See, what happens is when I talk to them directly, they want to meet the families. They want the proof of the cases. My hands are tied, as I said before, that I cannot.
Okay.
I cannot.
Another caller, Rafael, is on the line. Rafael, hi. We are in the source. Go ahead.
This is kind of an observation that I've been having for a little while now. You know, Donald Trump won the Republican nomination, and he started getting a specific section of the Republican Party to vote for him. That's how he won the primary. Now we have a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate. Are we going to see a really big division in the Republican Party where we have the Trump Republicans and we have the Congress Republicans, congressional Republicans, who are basically playing against each other,
right,
trying to pass their own sense of laws or I guess, bills to kind of get...
Rafael, oh, thanks for the call. I think I know where you're going with this. I'm going to go to John Wright at Texas Observer. Is it self-defeating to try and connect this to politics, or should this be something that, politics aside, John?
Yes, I think it's very much political, and it needs to be very much political. And you know, I think that's part of the, you know, the reason that we're putting so much emphasis on reporting and publicizing these incidents is because you know, going forward in 2 years, you know, the midterm elections in 2 years, and then the, you know, obviously the 2020 presidential election. I mean, we need documentation and evidence of everything that's happened. And I think people, you know, as they make decisions, need to keep all of that in mind. And just one other thing I want to add that kind of popped into my mind is we also need all of these different groups that are being marginalized and targeted to unite. And, you know, I mean, that sounds cliche, but we need, you know, Muslims, we need Hispanics, we need immigrants, we need the LGBT community. You know, each of these minorities may represent a relatively small minority, but when they're all working together intersectionally, we ultimately will represent a majority.
And what about like-minded everyone else?
Yes,
that's correct. Like-minded straight white males.
All right.
Absolutely.
John Wright, reporter, Texas Observer. They've got Hate Watch. Check it out online. Sawat Hussein, board president of American Islamic Relations. And also we're joined by Denise Hernandez. Thank y'all so much. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for tuning us in.